plaintiff's attorney, appellant's attorney in this matter. This case is here following cross motions for summary judgment. The lower court granted summary judgment to the defendants based upon qualified immunity. We agree that there's no factual issues, factual material issues in dispute. We contend, however, that summary judgment should have been granted for the plaintiffs in this and the plaintiff in this matter. In recent years, the Supreme Court has recently repeatedly reaffirmed the right of police officers to engage in voluntary consensual interviews in public places such as buses and airports, and yet not be engaged in a seizure as that's defined by the Fourth Amendment. This case presents the flip side of that issue. The right of a citizen to terminate such a voluntary consensual interview and walk away without having committed a criminal offense. This is precisely what occurred here with Beverly Thompson. The defendant police officers had conducted an investigation and they went to interview Ms. Thompson. She was a then 50-year-old long-term employee, roughly 20-year employee of a Kroger grocery store where they went to interview her. She had no criminal record. She voluntarily sat with the police officers for the interview. What is critical for the facts of this case and what is undisputed is that the police officers expressly told Ms. Thompson that she was not being placed under arrest. She answered questions put to her about her ring. She indicated that the ring was hers and that she had paperwork confirming that the ring was hers. She displayed her rings for the officers and for them to look at. At no time was there a single fact indicating that she had been seized. At no time did the police officer indicate anything other than that she was not under arrest.
Well, the police didn't know anything about how to evaluate this diamond, if it was a legitimate one or a fake or whatever it was. They were looking for specific ones, and they didn't know that. So why was it unreasonable for them to ask to have the rings and give her a receipt and they'd have somebody check it out?
Nobody. We don't contend it was unreasonable for them to make the request. What we do contend is that she has the right to refuse the request and walk away from it, since she wasn't being placed under arrest and she wasn't being seized. So we don't contend it was unreasonable. And what the police officers could have done, if the question comes up, what should they have done, given that Ms. Thompson wasn't going to cooperate with that aspect of the interview, there was plenty. They could have tried to corroborate the statement of
well, what do they do if she walks away with the rings? Isn't that the problem here?
That is
from their standpoint.
From the defense perspective, that is a problem. But they had, what they have to do is either seek a warrant, which they never try to do, or they should have, before they came to her in the first place, done something more to try and corroborate the statements of somebody who was a knowingly bad informant because he had lied to them.
Do you concede that if they would have said, well, if you won't give them to him, we have to keep you here while we go to get a warrant, would that have been reasonable?
Not on the facts that they had here, because under the facts they had here, they had no basis to get a warrant. All they had at that time was a knowingly bad informant, and not one detail or not one fact that he gave them was corroborated, which, you know, in connection with pointing the finger at Ms. Thompson. And they had a woman that did, and they had a woman that did nothing more. She didn't get up in the sense that she tried to run out of the store or do anything else that could be deemed to be suspicious or criminal. She was a 50-year-old woman who said, I want to call my husband. It's not unreasonable for her to have done that, as well as it's not unreasonable for the officers to have asked. That doesn't lead to, as one officer testified in his deposition, saying, well, if she doesn't consent, therefore she's a suspect. And the case law is quite clear that failure to consent to something in and of itself doesn't lead to probable cause to do anything. So the question of what should, and I'm aware of that question, what should they have done? They could have done a much, they could have taken the investigation in a different direction. They could have questioned Dolores Henry, re-questioned her, who had given a statement dramatically different than Calvin Myers, the informant. They could have talked to her again. They could have seen if there had been, tried to corroborate the story and seen if there had been a switch in the title of this 1995 Mustang that the informant claimed was traded for the ring.
Well, you agree that stolen property is contraband, I assume.
Correct, sure.
What if they looked in her purse and saw a substance in there, didn't know what it was, but thought it might be some kind of cocaine or something of that nature, but they weren't sure, And they would have said, we want to keep this, have it analyzed. Would that be appropriate?
If they're questioning, I'm not sure if they actually see it in plain view on the person's body, or I'm not sure of the precise...
No, any time. And any kind of a police-citizen confrontation, something is obtained that the police want to check out.
If they see something that, if they see a powder on the woman, for example, which resembles cocaine, they can, under the law, they could ask her to look at it, and if they have no other evidence indicating that it's cocaine, and in this situation she's in a grocery store, so it could easily have been powdered sugar as opposed to cocaine. They don't have the right to see that, absent some sort of evidence that it really is cocaine. It could be anything, because if the law were as the question poses itself, then the police officers could just walk out on the street, and any time they see something that they deem to look suspicious, they could say, you know what, stay here, we want to take this from you, analyze it, and we'll be back in a little while. And that's just not the law. And
what about, say, at an airport or something, you're going through a metal detector, and they find, not metal, but $5 million in cash in a suitcase? Can they retain that for a short time to find out what the source of it is?
If they find, of course, if they're violating duty laws, if it's an international flight and they're violating duty laws by doing that and it hasn't been declared, then you've got a different issue. If they happen to find $5 million...
You have to declare something, you're taking it out of the country?
I believe, I'm not sure of the international laws or and the customs duty laws on that. If they don't
you
have
don't
any
go through customs to leave the country, you go in.
No, you don't. Right, you do not go through customs to leave the country. And of course, if somebody has $5 million in their briefcase, I'm sure they can do plenty of other things to investigate the person without having necessarily seizing them. They could run their name. They have countless avenues of running the person's name in computers to find out the background of a person such as this. And if they come up with any additional information, they can go ahead and seize the person. But absent that, I don't believe, and I know you're taking your argument out to the nth degree, and I appreciate that, but I don't believe they can seize a person just for having a lot of money. And at what point, if that was the case, at what point would a lot of money be too much money to go on a plane with without having it be prone to being seized? So that presents its own dilemma. So, again, I would answer your question, Your Honor, that absent some other evidence indicating some suspicion, some reasonable suspicion, they can't detain that person.
Well, they were going to detain her. They never were going to detain her.
They were not going to
detain
her.
They just wanted to keep the rings.
Correct.
Well, they checked it out.
Correct. And she didn't want to part with her property.
Do you contend that she was detained when she was handcuffed?
Oh, absolutely. She was arrested.
Right.
And I don't think the defendants disagree with that concept. But she was in effect arrested at that point, and there's been no dispute. I don't believe that she was arrested at the point that she was handcuffed and then subsequently placed into the police car.
Even though the officers told her she wasn't under arrest.
Correct. Well, they told her she wasn't under arrest.
And then they handcuffed her after it.
After she got up
right.
And said, I want to call my husband.
Right.
So at that point, well, she's obviously not free to leave when she's in handcuffs and she is arrested.
Right.
And at that point, they still have no evidence. All they have is an unreliable, untested he has a tested informant. He's been tested falsely already to have lied. And that's all they've got, with no corroboration leading to her. It doesn't... Your Honor, it doesn't even seem to be a close case, and I know that there's a question of what an officer can do, and again, I have to reiterate, there was other investigation avenues they could have taken, and they should have taken them. They could have let her just call her husband. She wasn't indicating any intent to run out of the store. There was no evidence or fact indicating she intended to hide or damage any rings. Which, you know, again, that leads me to the second issue of this is that they made the argument for the first time in their brief that there was stolen property, and again, I'll have to reiterate that they just had no probable cause. There's not a court in this country that I've seen that has found probable cause based upon an untested, unreliable informant with no corroboration. With that, I'll reserve a little time. Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Nish Ravel. I represent the appellees in this case. The question before this court is whether a reasonable officer under the same circumstances and equipped with the same knowledge as the officers in this case could have reasonably believed that probable cause existed in light of well-established law. I believe that is the case law, and that is the standard that needs to be met here.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute.
Sure.
This seems so bizarre to me, what happened here. Who sells two diamond rings worth over $10,000 at a flea market and takes a check or two checks in payment for it?
Judge, I cannot answer that question.
I mean, wouldn't the police say this sounds so wacky, nobody in the world would do something? Would you sell diamond ring worth two diamond rings worth $10,000 to somebody at a flea market and take a check for it? And so something's rotten in Denmark here. So why do the police, faced with this story, go out and launch this investigation?
Judge, the police launched this investigation because the person who had written those checks had confessed to doing so. He then informed these officers that he gave one of the rings to a Calvin Myers. When Calvin Myers was interviewed, he at first stated that he was not in possession of any of the rings, and then later, subsequently, he did state that he was in possession of one, but he gave it to his girlfriend. He then said his girlfriend gave it to...
I know, we get one step to another, and
exactly.
Then you end up going to the Kroger's where this 52-year-old woman works,
and
handcuff her.
And then we end up at the Kroger's. The officers notice that she has a diamond ring on each hand. They go to interview her. In the middle of the interview, she abruptly stands up and begins to walk away.
Well, she walks away because she asked to call the husband, because they ask her about the ring, and they want to take the ring, and she says, you know, I'd like to make a call to my husband. Is that, you know...
Judge, my understandings of the facts are that she gets up and makes the statement, I'm calling my husband, and walks away.
And why couldn't they walk with her to allow her to call?
Judge, they didn't. They did. They actually got up and they blocked her from...
I said,
from
why didn't they get up with her and walk with her so she could make the call?
Judge, I do not know why they did not do that.
And let me ask you this on the probable cause, because you argue a lot in the briefs that they had probable cause for possession of stolen property, you know, then that was a good basis for the arrest, and we'll get to the point that he makes whether or not there was a sufficient basis to even have probable cause for that. But was that raised before the district court?
Judge,
and were there specific findings by the court on that? And if it wasn't raised, why isn't that waived? And therefore, you're left with the other charge was obstruction.
Judge, the reason why it's important that the officers had a reasonable belief that these diamonds were, in fact, the stolen diamonds, is that supports their reasonable belief in the fact that she was actually getting up to somehow dispose of these diamonds. That forms the basis of the obstruction charge.
You're not arguing that they had probable cause for possession of stolen property in terms of just the arrest itself. You're just saying they had enough reason to believe the property was stolen, and therefore when she got up, they thought that they took that to be an obstruction.
That is correct, Judge. That is correct. Your Honors, the Illinois law states that...
And let me go back to the probable cause then on the stolen property. Just, you agree with counsel that the informant that was relied upon was unreliable?
Judge, I would not make that conclusion.
So what do the facts say to support his reliability that the police officers knew
at the time? The facts that I would suggest would be that initially he denied it, then he admitted complicity within this entire scheme. He then produces what he suggest is the actual...
The setting.
The setting of the ring, and he hands it to him, and he explains that this ring is now in the appellant's wedding ring, and he also claimed that he had seen that wedding ring, I believe it was a few weeks prior to that.
That he had seen it in that setting, in her setting.
He had seen her with the wedding ring on. I cannot say that he conclusively stated that. I know for a fact that that's the ring.
Judge, it appears to me that the appellant's contention that there was no probable cause is based pretty much on the fact that she was told that she was not under arrest at the time, and therefore her unilateral act of actually getting up and leaving the interview could not have possibly formed the requisite physical act necessary for an obstruction of a peace officer charge. However, I believe that the law requires that in order to prevail, in order for the plaintiff to prevail in this case, that they must put forth clearly established case law which states that the officer's conduct in this specific instance was actually improper. And I don't think a broad generalization, like saying that a person that is not under arrest and there's no probable cause to arrest the person, can, during an investigation, if the officers actually believe and have a reason to believe that there are diamonds, stolen diamonds in her rings, she can then just walk away from them. I don't believe that there's any case law. I don't believe the opponent is cited.
Hypothetically, if the police, instead of going to the Kroger store and getting in this confrontation, would have gone to a judge and said, this is the evidence we have. We want a search warrant for the house of this woman to look at these two rings. Do you think a judge would have issued that search warrant?
Judge, based upon Meyer's statements alone, I don't know whether a judge would have. I think it's arguable that probable cause in this case actually did exist.
Probable cause did exist?
Arguable
was
probable cause.
Was she a suspect?
I'm sorry, Judge?
Was she a suspect?
I don't know if it can be said that she could have been charged with possession of stolen merchandise.
Well, that whole thing of believes that some judge is going to believe this loony story that somebody at a flea market sold $10,000 worth of diamond rings and took a check in payment.
Judge, but I don't believe that fact is disputed at all. That in fact did happen. I don't think anybody's questioning whether
well,
or not...
I'm questioning.
Of course you are, Your Honor. Of course you are.
If she's a
just
suspect...
Just because you tell me something, or everybody says something, doesn't make it true. It just doesn't seem possible.
Well, if she is a suspect, why isn't she entitled to her Miranda rights?
Just at the time...
The moment she becomes a suspect, they continue to quit until they got that ring out of her.
She was not arrested while they were speaking with her.
No, but then they decided to arrest her, and then they got the ring out of her.
That is correct.
They must have asked her again.
And they did provide her with her Miranda rights at that time, and she refused to waive them. But she also agreed to cooperate then after that.
Well, is it the department policy to not take no for an answer when questioning an individual who at the time, you concede that at the time they questioned her, she wasn't advised of her Miranda, and she wasn't a suspect, right?
That's correct.
It was just an investigation. So,
that is correct.
Is it so that if somebody says, no, I won't give you this, and they turn away from the police officers, that is sufficient to say it's obstruction?
And then you become a suspect because you think you're going to walk away.
Because you say no when you're a non-suspect.
If the officers have a reasonable belief that there are stolen diamonds in those rings, we would argue that under this factual situation, with her abruptly getting up and walking out, that yes, it is an obstruction of a peace officer charge.
So her saying that she wanted to get up to call the husband, do you agree from your standpoint that she had that conversation, that she made those statements to the officers?
That she made
that
the statement
like
that I'm going to call my husband. Yes, she did.
Right.
She did.
And was there a phone nearby where she could have called the husband within sight of the officers?
I don't know where the nearest phone was. I believe there was an office that one of the managers had that contained the phone.
And wouldn't it have made more sense for them to say, okay, I'll go call your husband, we'll wait right here and keep
or
her,
go
and
with
keep
her.
The door, go with her and keep the door open so they wouldn't hear what she said to the husband, but they could see her. So in other words, they wouldn't be concerned at the property that somehow she'd throw the ring down the toilet or something like that.
Judge, I think we have to look at this in the perspective of the police officers. They're making essentially an on-site determination. They're having a conversation with this woman, and she abruptly makes this action, and they react to the action.
Let me just to nail down the time here. What is the period of time between the sale at the flea market of the rings, if that ever happened, and how it happened, and the arrival of the police at the Kroger store? It's over 6 months, isn't it?
It is. Your Honor, on May 17th is when this incident happened, and the checks, I believe the diamonds were purchased with these false checks in December of 2000.
So it's a six-month-old investigation.
Yes.
At that point.
If there are no further questions from the panel, I would respectfully request...
You need one more minute to cover something, because we have been peppering with a few questions.
Your Honor, the only point that I wanted to make is that we believe that there's a reasonable basis for their actions based upon the obstruction of a peace officer charge. We do not believe that appellant has advanced any case which clearly establishes that their actions that day were violative of the Fourth Amendment or any other constitutional right or statute. For that reason, Judge, we are asking that the district court's decision be affirmed.
Before you leave.
Yes.
It also is a fact here, isn't it, that it turned out, when all was said and done, that these rings that she had were not the rings that were taken in the flea market.
Judge, that is correct. That is correct. But they did not have that information at the time.
Yeah, I understand.
Thank you.
How much time?
30 seconds.
Mr. Thompson did have insurance papers that he did bring to him shortly after his wife was handcuffed, showing it was their rings. And I would just like to briefly address...
What's that got to do with it? It's what was in the officer's mind at the time that he performed the act,
right.
Not what he brought 5 minutes later or 2 minutes later.
The reason I say that is because the question came up, what could the officers have done? And a couple, if the woman had made the phone call, the husband...
They could have gone with her. It's obvious.
Right. And then they could have, the husband would have brought the papers as he did without having to arrest her and take her rings. And that's the only point, reason why I raised that. But the other issue is, Your Honor asked about the reliability on the informant, and counsel indicated that he believed him to be reliable because... Is it okay if I just finish my
thought? Go ahead and finish your
be reliable because on the second statement he admitted complicity in it, but that wasn't why he should be deemed reliable, because he admitted complicity in the first statement. Then Dolores Henry becomes his ex-girlfriend, and now he changes the story to blame his ex-girlfriend's in-laws for the ring. And then finally, with regard to the clearly established law issue, the Supreme Court keeps stating over and over again, U.S. v. Drayton was the most recent case, that police officers have the right to question people and citizens have the right to walk away. And there is law very close on point by this circuit in 2001, Williams v. Jaclowski, which we all cited, which had a very similar situation, and the court said that officers would not be granted qualified immunity on an obstruction arrest. And I'll just conclude by saying that if a citizen does not have a right to walk away from a consensual interview, then the whole point behind these assertions by the Supreme Court would go without meaning. Thank you.
All right. We'll take the case under advisement and proceed to case number 6, please. Case versus Mileski.